Hello, and welcome to OMFIF's Fed Talk podcast. On this week's episode, we talk about economic developments in 2018, the Federal Reserve's policy, and the US outlook for 2019. This is Randall Law from London, and today we talk to Darrell Delamade, US editor for OMFIF and writer for Handelsblatt Global. Welcome. 2018 has been a tumultuous year, both in the US and globally, with growing trade tensions, economic uncertainty, and currently a budgetary impasse in the US. Meanwhile, the Federal Reserve has been raising interest rates as part of its strategy to normalize monetary policy in response to a strong US economy with low unemployment and encouraging growth. However, the year ended with slowing growth, lower consumer confidence, and the stock market's worst performance reportedly since 2008, signaling that 2019 might see a change in the current trends. So, Darrell, firstly, how would you summarize the Fed's actions and monetary policy strategy for 2018? Was it the right approach, do you think? And how do you see this fitting in the wider global economic context?
Well, I think what might have happened in 2018 is that the Fed got a bit trapped in its own forward guidance. They acted almost like it was set in concrete rather than being flexible, as they keep saying it is, responding to data. The other problem they ran into, of course, was that President Trump kept harassing them, almost forcing them into a corner. Even had they wanted to pass on a December rate hike, it would have been hard for them to do so because it would have looked like they were bowing to Trump's behest. So I think they should have moved sooner to recognize the slowing of the economy and perhaps paused in December and maybe even in September on the rate hikes.
In terms of those rate hikes, do you expect there to be a real slowdown in rate increases in 2019? And do you think policy normalization has pretty much ended now that we are at the 2 to 2.5% range?
I think they've already backed off from penciling in 3 rate hikes for next year to 2, and I think it's more likely to be 1. Fed future funds are saying right now that there will be no rate hikes in 2019, and there won't be any until 2020. That might be a bit overdone, too. Normalization is a tricky word. They have changed parameters, and I think the Fed policymakers, as well as everyone else, is kind of feeling their way into what is normal. They have no idea, really, what the so-called neutral rate is, the interest rate that will neither stimulate nor dampen the economy.
So in terms of moving into 2019 with a different makeup of the FOMC, do you think anything will change significantly in terms of who will be voting on the FOMC? And do you think the Fed might become a bit more dovish in the next year?
I think there's a chance to become more dovish. I'm not sure it has that much to do with the rotation of voting members. I think one of the strengths of the Fed is that the regional presidents have their own staffs and so forth. But the Fed is set up so that the Board of Governors in Washington clearly dominates, and the staff at the Board of Governors clearly dominate the FOMC meetings. I think more depends on how Powell and Clarita, the new vice chairman, Richard Clarita, react to the data that's coming in, and the data should finally start capturing the slowdown that everyone is talking about.
Talking about that data, you mentioned earlier as well the forward guidance. How reliable is this data and how absolute should it be in determining rate increases or possibly staying at neutral rates in 2019?
Well, I think, you know, data is by definition backward-looking. Stock markets by definition are forward-looking. So you have Powell saying at his press conference in December that, you know, none of the trade tensions or anything is showing up in the data, nor in their macroeconomic projections. And yet, you know, investors seem to be scared out of their wits. So there's a disconnect there. And how we resolve that? Should the Fed be looking at other things besides just this data? And I think, with all due respect to Jerome Powell, who's probably a very good consensus maker, he is not an economist. And that shows up in times like this where you need someone with an established economic viewpoint. So I think that's one of the problems with interpreting the data, is that he may not have, on his own accord, the context to interpret that data.
Yeah, and what's I think also interesting is that the regional Feds appear to be doing a lot more in terms of what they call focusing on Main Street, looking at unemployment and more local economic development. How important do you think that will be in setting interest rates as well, and generally the approach that the Fed takes to economic development in the U.S.?
Well, I think that was certainly a focus under Janet Yellen. You know, she pushed that. She had a lot of informal meetings herself with a lot of normal people. I'm not sure what Jerome Powell is doing in that regard. As I said, I think one of the strengths of the Fed is that you have these 12 regional bank presidents who are in constant contact with mostly business people in their regions. Each region covers several states. And I think they can be a real channel for more anecdotal evidence of if you talk about business confidence, how people are feeling about investment, and that input can really help formulate policy for the Fed. I think there may be more of that. You asked earlier about the people rotating into voting positions. James Bullard, the St. Louis Fed president, is probably the biggest dove on the FOMC. And he will be outspoken, I think, and may even dissent in his voting if the Fed doesn't pause in its interest rate hikes.
Another thing might also be interesting to discuss is the influence that Donald Trump has, or, well, might not have over the Fed. So what influence do you think Trump really has? He's been very vocal about Jerome Powell and the interest rate increases initially. So do you think he has any real influence? And do you think there might be any danger of the independence of the Fed being compromised?
Well, I think, again, as with normalization, we have to take central bank independence. We have to put it in the proper context. I think everybody wants central banks to be independent of political trends. However, they basically, in the end, have to be accountable in a democracy to the public. And that's why, you know, the Fed chairman has to go before Congress twice a year to talk about monetary policy. As for Donald Trump, I think part of his tactic in this case, I'm not sure he really thought he could get the Fed to back down or get the Fed to follow his criticism, but he has set up the Fed to be the fall guy. If the economy does continue to slow down or even to tank, he can turn around and say, well, I tried to tell them, but they ignored my advice. He's done this on several occasions. So that's not influence per se. The influence, in fact, really when it was counterproductive in the sense that the more he talked about the Fed not raising interest rates, the more he forced them to go ahead with their forward guidance.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to see how it largely is about political tactics. So how do you think the interaction between Trump and the Fed will develop in 2019 leading up to 2020 for the next presidential elections?
Well, I think we all have a little difficulty forecasting just how Trump is going to act or interact. He goes back and forth. He steps back and is all smiles and friends for a while, whether it's the North Korean leader or the Fed chairman, and then he's harshly critical. This may be all tactics on his part, but whatever, it makes it hard to predict. I think it's perfectly reasonable to expect that he will come to some sort of reconciliation with the Fed now that the Fed is not bound by any concrete forward guidance to raise interest rates a certain number of times. If they pause through the spring and even maybe continue into the summer not to raise interest rates, I think that will smooth out the relationships with President Trump.
Thank you for that. Moving on to fiscal policy. Currently, of course, there's a government shutdown going on in the US. And now that people are coming back to Washington, what do you think is the way forward for the shutdown? And do you think there are any significant potential consequences of the shutdown in terms of wider economic outlook for 2019?
Well, I think the amazing thing is what all of us here in the States have noticed is how little discussion there, you know, the government shut down. This used to be kind of a thing people would talk about, but nowadays it just seems part of the normal political dysfunction going on in Washington. So in terms of long-term consequences or harm, the shutdown, as far as it's gone, doesn't seem too significant. And also, I don't think it's really a fiscal or financial question. You know, the $5 billion for the wall is, somebody said, not even a rounding error in the federal budget. So it's a political issue, and it will have to be resolved politically. And one of the apparent compromises that's being floated is to trade some funding, maybe not the full $5 billion, some funding for the wall for a resolution on the Dreamers, the children been born here and are not yet naturalized citizens. So I think that's a potential compromise. I think both parties want to start getting ready for the presidential election, and they can't do that with a government shutdown going on.
I'd like to move on, if I may, to the wider economic outlook for 2019. Of course, just had a new president being sworn in Brazil. There's all sorts of uncertainty around US, maybe also China-US relations. There's Brexit in Europe. What is your outlook for 2019? What do you think are the specific things you should be paying attention to? Of course, we can't predict what's going to happen. But how do you see 2019 develop?
Well, obviously, you just listed a number of the risks, and I think Europe is probably one of the biggest risks, and perhaps people are underestimating the kind of pickle that Europe is in. You have the prospect at the ECB of Mario Draghi leaving, and he has been personally a big part of the credibility of the euro. I think that, and then of course the complications from Brexit, make Europe a very difficult proposition for 2019. As far as the U.S. is concerned, I think the economy per se still has some life left in it. We can only tell probably with hindsight just what role the interest rate hikes played or didn't play. But it's been a long economic cycle and it has to be nearing its end. As for the rest of the world, it so much depends on the U.S. economy and the Fed that things we have been talking about so far will be largely what determines what happens in Brazil or South America or emerging markets in general, I think. As for China, again, I think there you have the unpredictability of how Trump interacts. One day he's harshly critical, the next day he's praising them for their reasonableness. So I think we're going to just continue to ride that roller coaster. But eventually it's in the interest of both countries to find some sort of resolution.
Absolutely. I mean, considering what you've just said about the US being the end of the current economic cycle and also the uncertainty in other parts of the world, do you think there's another financial crisis around the corner? And if so, where do you think it might come from?
Well, I think people are justifiably worried about Italy and, you know, the kind of doom loop you have in the Eurozone in general, but in Italy in particular right now, where the domestic banks are the ones holding a lot of the government bonds and the issues that Italy has within the euro, widening the gap between the yields on Italian government bonds and German government bonds. That means lower prices for those Italian bonds, which creates problems for the bank balance sheets. And Italian banks are fragile enough without that potential problem coming along. So I think markets are quite concerned about what's going on in Italy, and justifiably so. If there were to be a government debt crisis / banking crisis, I think people would expect that to come in Italy. But none of the European banks are particularly robust. And oddly enough, in the strongest economy, Germany is where the banks are really among the weakest. And the two biggest banks, Deutsche Bank and Commerzbank, are so weak, they're talking about merging them. The only problem being that put two weak banks together, that doesn't make a strong bank. So that's where, again, Europe is where I would look, where I would keep a close watch for signs of a financial crisis. I think in the U.S., there's been a much better house cleaning in terms of getting bank balance sheets strengthened, in terms of monitoring bank activity and punishing misdeeds than you've had in Europe. So I think the U.S. economy and the U.S. banking industry are in a much stronger position.
Daryl, thank you very much for your comments. The OMFIF podcast is published on our channel every Tuesday, so you can download it once it has been broadcast or subscribe to our channel. If you've enjoyed the program, then please do leave us a review.